This is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about the humble six-sided die and how it's essential to the foundations of D&D. Did you know that most mechanics in early D&D were based on a D6 roll? It's true. We'll dice up whether that was good or bad and how much you should embrace it today. All that and more on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's conversation, I will remind everyone that, as always, at the end of the show, we will be hosting our After Party Chat. That's a live video chat that Dan and I host with all our patrons, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get your account all set up over there during the course of the show, and maybe about 10 minutes after the end of the show, Dan and I will be there to talk to you all live.
We love that part of the week. We hope you can join us. We have the best patrons here. For example, Vacuous is currently checking that we are, in fact, live on Twitch and YouTube and Restream Bot. So, Vacuous and our other patrons, thanks for joining in today. Fantastic. You know, Paul, we did have a prior episode in season five where we had a little bit of a debate about whether it was better to use like all D6s for early D&D combat and hit dice and damage and stuff like that, as opposed to later variable dice and D8s for hit dice and stuff. So people can look back at that particular kind of more theoretical conversation, maybe. And briefly at the start, everything in D&D was D6s, actually. Shifted to other stuff in the first supplement. And in fact, they would just say, roll a die, and wouldn't even specify early on. And you just had to know that by default, everything was D6s. So today we're going to talk more about, like, the surprising multitude of mechanics that we didn't get to last time that were all D6s and why and whether it was a good idea and what other games do and stuff like that.
Dan, folks may not know this, but a long while ago, I was when I was an engineer at 38 Studios building an MMO that was similar in scope and tone to World of Warcraft. I was what was called a domain lead. I was in charge of a section of gameplay, and that section of gameplay was all gameplay that's not combat. That was the easiest way to describe it. Everything but combat, because combat was so complicated and so detailed and had so much going on in it. It needed a whole separate team. And then my team was responsible for all of the rest of the gameplay, all the other things that happen in the world, right?
Basically, in early D&D, that other team was the D20 team, and you were the D6 team.
I was the D6 team, essentially, yeah.
You never told me that. That's totally news to me, and I did not know that about your work at 38. That's amazing.
Yeah. I can't even remember anymore what the actual title was. I knew it was domain lead of something. And it was very long in this mouthful, and I just started telling people it was domain lead of gameplay that's not combat. Wow. That was just easier.
That's great. Easier to digest. That's great. That's amazing.
Today's conversation comes up because you and I have been working on iterating on the dungeon design dashes. Folks who've been watching recently know that we've done a couple in rapid succession recently at some of the conventions we went to, and we're now pretty severely behind in releasing the final PDF of some of our dashes. We're three dungeon design dashes behind. So we're trying to get those out.
Three torches deep.
Iterating on those. We're pretty close on number 6, number 7 and 8 are coming along. You know, the funny thing is they've almost gone a little bit faster because by doing them at the conventions, I wanted to format them up a little bit so that I could print them out and have them at the table. It's actually helped accelerate that a little bit, which is kind of nice.
My thought. And I had those pages I was using with notes on my desk like a couple days ago. I was like, I need to. So it gave me incentive to process that stuff. I'd actually, you know, run it and get the papers off my desk. So I was just doing that in the last day or two.
Yeah. So of course, the last mile is always the hardest. And We're trying to tune that up and get that out to you all. There will be some changes on how that's going to work. I am trying to implement a new system that will make sure that anyone who is a patron gets access to all the dungeon design dashes from the beginning until today. So please, by all means, don't worry that you're going to miss it. Come join the Patreon and know that you will get access to the dungeon design dashes. That's it. I was looking at a note from Dan this morning on one of them, and it was commenting on a specific door, a very large stuck door, barred door, something like that. It was difficult to open, and it just had a note that said it's at -2 to open. And my brain absolutely tripped up on that, and I went, -2? Wait, what is the math on that? What die am I rolling? How is this supposed to work? And I was trying to figure out how to comment on our document to say, like, how could we modify this language to be easier to grok? Because I'm just looking at -2 and thinking, but what is the role and what does that mean and where do I find it? And I opened up, of course, my OD&D book and I find it. And I'm looking in through the OED house rules that you wrote, Dan. They're there, of course, but they're in the DM side, not the player side. So I was looking
through
the document. So I'm leafing through and trying to remember how the hell this stuff works. And I was like, there's got to be an easier way. Why is this not stuck in my brain, right? That's really what I'm after when we talk about these mechanics. Where my brain wants to go is I want something that is just going to stick in my brain, so I don't have to have these internal monologues every time I bump my head into something like this. I want to see the line of one line of text at the table and go, I know exactly what that die has to be rolled.
I'll say that I've got a little bit more original D&D injected in my veins, and again, you're historically you tend to come a little bit more from the BX rules, and I tend to come from a little bit more from the AD&D rules, and so I know what the traditional basic rule is by default, and I in that particular case I didn't think about. When I wrote that, I didn't think about having to specify it anymore. And I will say, look, the other incentive on this particular conversation today is that this was briefly commented on at my table when I was running that adventure at RPGCon. So at the outset, we had a halfling trying to climb up over the big island dungeon area. And I said, you're going to roll a D6. And that particular player who's newer to original D&D and totally game for it was like, oh, really, a D6? And one of the more knowledgeable players had to say, oh, yes, well, in original D&D, you know, some of your mechanics are going to be D20s, but some are going to be, a lot of them are going to be D6s. And they accepted it perfectly fine, but it did have to be commented on that there isn't a single core mechanic for every success or failure check you're going to make. And again, you know, almost all the mechanics in classic D&D were D6 based, and it wasn't until third edition in 2000 that they settled on this core mechanic that they call the D20 system for everything. So it is a bit of a novelty that has to get addressed when I have new players at my con games and stuff like that. And I will also say at the outset that I've written about this a couple times on my blog in the past. So in the YouTube description, I have a link to a couple of articles on what we're discussing here today, because I've thought about this a lot in the past, and therefore I overlook the fact that I need to detail that when I write text for somebody else.
it's interesting, right? I think one of the problems and one of the reasons it doesn't stick well in my brain is, like you said, in the original D&D, there's no core mechanic. It's never laid out in one spot.
Yeah,
it's very specific, right? Like if you go hunting through the OD&D book, you'll find here is the roll you have to make to open a stuck door. Here is the roll you have to make to remain hidden. Here is the roll you have to make to listen at a door, right? And often it is a D6 roll. Often it is, oh, there's a 1 in 6 chance, or there's a 2 in 6 chance, or something like that. But the language is slightly different in each case. The numbers are slightly different. So, usually it's roll low. Sometimes it's roll high. Sometimes it's unclear, right? And so there's just, it's just not, and then of course there's gaps, right? There's tons of gaps. And I think a lot of folks want this, unified mechanic just so that I know where to go when say I'm like, well, I'm not trying to open a stuck door. I'm trying to tread water in a pool, or I'm trying to jump over a chasm. These things don't have any rules.
They don't. They don't.
But it seems logical to say, I'm going to look at this rule and adapt it in this way.
Yeah. You want to pull up the, as an example, you want to pull up the image with the red dot that has basically a lot of these things that you're talking about right now. So this is from Original D&D Volume 1. This is my first printing copy that I pulled this out of. This is page 9, basically, of the DM's book, right? So that box came with three little booklet, 1, 2, 3. Number 3 is the DM's book. And so page 9 of the DM's book has a lot of this general dungeon exploratory hygiene stuff. And you can see that the parts that I highlighted, so every paragraph here has one of these, what you're going to do in this particular dungeon exploratory case. Most of the time, the most frequent thing is for a 1 or 2 on a 6-sided die to indicate a change to the status quo. And so in my stats brain, I'm thinking rejecting the null hypothesis is usually a 1 or a 2 on a D6. So the first thing there, secret passages are located on a roll of 1 or 2 on a 6-sided die by men or dwarves or hobbits, and then that gets modified a little bit for elves. Second paragraph, doors must be forced open by strength, a roll of 1 or 2, indicating the door opens. And notice they don't bother to say 6-sided die there, but that's what it is. Then it says, traps are usually sprung by a roll of 1 or 2 when someone passes over them, same for pits. Third paragraph, hearing noises is a 1 for humans, but a 1 or 2 for everybody else, elves, dwarves, hobbits. And then when you walk into a place you don't know about, you might be surprised, and that's a 1 or 2 on a D6. So in my brain, if I don't know anything else about a mechanic in early D&D, it's going to be a 1 or a 2 on a D6 that maybe I'm going to modify up or down for a really sensitive elf or a not great hearing human or something like that. And that's, to my mind, that's the most common mechanic in original D&D.
Now, let me ask you this question, Dan. What is your impression from this text of the intent in OD&D? And you're going to have to make some assumptions here, because I'm guarantee you the text is not going to tell you. But what is your assumption here about who rolls the die?
Oh, well, I mean, technically, you know, when it was written, the intent was the DM, including like ability scores for PCs. Yeah,
that's my assumption as well. Generally, it's written from the DM's perspective. And I think that's possibly part of what makes this confusing for folks who are more used to modern games. And it's this shift in perspective, which is really interesting, because I think you called it out just now where you said that it's written in this way of what is the percent chance of a change, right? And it's kind of this objective view around like, there's no strong feeling here. There's no concept of like success or failure, right? It's a change in the state. Whereas once you put the dice in the player's hand and the players are rolling, they're more likely to think of success and failure. And then you add this subjective layer on top to the thing that's happening of, do I want this thing to change or not? Right.
Yeah.
Which I think is that's really interesting
observation.
Right. And there's
one. So on this point, there's one of the more interesting points is right at the end of the original D&D book, they're talking about ships, and they're talking about what happens if you fall off a mast. And there's this really interesting paragraph where the rule, and it's just like 2 sentences, but the rule says the chance of someone getting hurt falling off a mast is 1 chance per 10 feet. Okay, so you know, if you fall off 20 feet, it's 1 or 2 on a D6, you get hurt. And then it says, for example, if you fall 40 feet, you need to roll a 5 or 6 to save. And so it's the same mechanic. And in 2 different sentences, it talks about rolling low to get hurt or rolling high to save. And as far as Gary's brain at that particular moment, that's the same mechanic. And you can look at it in either direction you want. And I think that's a really interesting example to that point you're making.
That is very interesting. So when I talk about this desire to like, find a generic mechanic or a reusable mechanic across situations, right? I think a lot of people in old school games, they went into the realm of ability checks, right? And quickly you started to see folks doing stuff where they were rolling a d20 equal to or under their characteristic, right? Which is ignoring...
It's such a nice, elegant mechanic.
It's decent. I don't hate it. The problem I had with it. Okay, so we're going to get into the disagreement here about roll high versus roll low,
and what we are.
I generally want a roll high system. I want a roll high system from the player's perspective again, just because players perceive big numbers better. So I always want like the good thing to be at the high end of the die and the bad thing from the player's perspective to be at the low end. But I've tried inverting it, and this has actually been, we've played with inversion of math, right? You use target 20 in combat to kind of invert them in when it, sometimes I've found myself describing it to people as like the inverse of Thaco. Like it's the same as Thaco. Yeah. It's just math is the other way. Yeah. Right. But it's still just generally this roll a d20, add a bunch of numbers, try to get above a 20 or higher. You can invert the ability check. And the weird way to invert the ability check is to say roll a d20, add the complete ability score, not the modifier, the actual ability score, try to get 20 or higher. Technically, I know that's off by 5%. Right. I've given them a little 5% bonus by doing it that
way. Don't worry about that.
You could say 21 or higher if you really want mathematical equivalence. Mm-hmm. But anyway. It always trips them up every time to the point where I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore because it always, they're like the whole number, like my whole dexterity. Are you sure? They're just so confused by it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's clearly not the right choice.
And so, a lot of people are momentarily going to get tripped up by the actual math. So when they have to do double digit with carry, if they roll in, 18 with an ability score of 13, like a lot of people are going to have a bit of a pause. Trying to figure that out.
Yep. You're absolutely right. So we have modifiers, right? We have this abstraction that added modifiers to ability stats. This wasn't in OD&D. I don't think it was in even supplement one, right? This is I know we use it in OED. I'm trying to think of what the origin of it is. I don't know.
Give me an example of what the kind of thing you're thinking about.
I'm thinking about the base, like boil down your two-digit ability score to a plus or minus 5, right? A range of, right? Your dexterity of 16 gives you a plus 2 to things. Is that in first edition? Do we have that in first edition generically? I feel like in first edition it was still kind of bifurcated a little with charts.
Some minor form of that has always been there since original D&D Volume 1, very first book. Very small number of modifiers, like right this second, I'm looking at page 11 of original D&D. And if your dexterity is high or low, you can fire missiles at plus 1 or minus 1 adjustment. Mm-hmm. Now, when you get to AD&D, the very first supplement, those modifiers become far more detailed. And in fact,
they didn't resolve it into a generic, this number equals this modifier, right? That did not exist.
Absolutely not. I have an image prep for that. If you pull up the image with the red dot, the orange dot, sorry. So thinking about this myself, what a great question. So this is the advanced D&D, and it's the same in first or second edition for what it's worth. Again, all the way up before third edition, they had separate tables for every different ability in advanced D&D. Here we're looking at the strength table, which is the very first thing you'd see in the player's handbook. And for strength, you can see bunch of different categories. Sometimes it goes up by 2 pips or 1. Then they also have the percentage at the top end. And the 2 hit is not the same as the damage adjustment, right? You got to look at this table and you're going to have a different 2 hit adjustment versus your damage adjustment. And then notice that the third column that I've snipped out there is opening doors on and it's still a D6. Right. Even in advanced D&D, it's still roll a D6 and you have to look up in this table whether your chance of succeeding to open a door is, 1 or 2 if you have a strength of 10, but it could be lower, it could be higher, but it's still a D6 even now. And you're right, they haven't consolidated. There's a different table for every single ability, and there's a different number for your hit versus damage versus dodge versus shoot an arrow. And they hadn't thought about this consolidated mechanic until around 2000.
Now, interestingly, this comes up in one other place that I'm aware of in first edition. I don't have this as a screenshot. Sorry, folks. But if you look at the thief skills ability tables, everything's percentage. except hear noise, which is a D6, right? And I find that fascinating. And my assumption is you have to have that because hear noise is not a thief only skill necessarily, right? The thieves are doing better, much like fighters with exceptional strength are doing better at open doors, but this is a rule that is available to everyone.
And I agreed, the gloss that I'd put on it is that Gary and Frank and Dave and all those guys had this axiom whereby anything we ever did in original D&D should work the same in advanced D&D. As far as we're concerned, it's the same game canonically. And so granted that we established hearing was a D6 at the outset, we must maintain the same mechanic for the thieves when we advance forward.
Yep. Which is interesting, and personally I find annoying. It's odd.
That unwillingness to change stuff?
Just the mixed mechanics, right? Right? Like, okay. So again, in OED, and I think you find it irksome as well, because you've house ruled it in OED, right? Where thief skills are just a single standard mechanic. It is roll this die this way, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
He says hesitantly, but
yeah, and also the fact that every single different category is a different percentage, and I'm trying to get away from having to look stuff up in a table, right? So I want something that at the table, if I have an NPC show up randomly, I can just deduce what their skills are, and you know, the by the book rule is you can't do that. You have to look it up differently for every different skill, which I don't want to do in game.
It's still not perfect, right? And there are overlaps that annoy me. So there's things like if you're using percentile thief skills, you have hide in shadows, which is a percentile chance. But you also have halflings and elves who can hide in woods that use a D6 roll. And if I'm in the woods and I want to hide, which one should I use? Correct. It's correct. Confusing.
Now I'll throw out something you're going to hate even more, and that is the fact that initially, right, in original D&D Supplement 1, when they showed up, when we brought in the thieves for the first time, most of the skills were percentage roll low, but the climbing the walls was the opposite. It was expressed as there's a chance of falling. So there's a chance of 13% to fall when you're first level, and that goes down by 1% each level. So 10th level thief only has a 4% chance of slipping. And then you go forward to advanced D&D. And on the one hand, the player's handbook flips it around, but they have modifiers in the DM's guide that forgets they flipped it around. And it says like, oh, on a slippery surface, double the chance of falling. But that doesn't sync up with what they changed in the player's handbook. So not yet, at the outset, some of the thief skills were roll low and some were roll high.
It's a lot, and it's again, I fall back to this problem of I just want a simple mechanic that can stick in my head so I don't have to go digging through the book and figure out, wait, what was the rule for this case in this situation? Just want to know what the hell, what kind of dice to roll. And I want it to be obvious, right? And especially when we write an encounter and we say, hey, this is a big, heavy barred door, difficult to open. Therefore, it changes the mechanics in this way. What way is that? What does -2 on this stuck open door mean, Dan?
So I'm just going to defend the mechanic a little bit, right? Yeah, I like the D6 rolls. I wish that we hadn't gotten away from them. And, you know, I've said this before, I think a couple people, I think Bacquius in the chat has said this, that D20s are for a player-facing thing and D6s are for a DM-facing thing. And I think the way that I put that in the past is, by default, everything's a D6. It's easy to adjudicate. It's easy to judge if it's a completely novel action that's happening. 1 through 6, I can gauge that pretty well. By default, it's 1 to 2 to succeed at something. And then when you get into a life or death situation of combat, it's kind of like zooming in or slowing down in an action movie. Now we get more detail in the system. Now we're going to break out the D20s. The players are going to be rolling D20s to see whether they live or die. Again, for me, if I just assume like, okay, most everything's a D6 and most everything is succeeding on 1 or 2 in D6, that gives me a pretty good foundation for judgments in original D&D. And I find that easier than having to think about things, everything in a 20 point space. So me, I actually like the D6s, and it's easy. I find that the easier to remember myself.
Interesting. Yeah. There's a few different things in there I want to push on, which I'm not sure. I'm trying to decide which one to select first. You know, this is, we definitely differ here, Dan, right? This is similar to our takes on encumbrance, right? Right. You have this stone system that operates in thirds and sixths, and I've opted for something more based on the BX system, which is decimal valued to calculate up how much weight you're carrying, and from there figure out your movement rate. Again, I'm not saying that the stone system is bad, but just it's not for me because my brain just doesn't like to think in thirds and sixths. It's a weird increment.
It's just thirds.
Not one that jumps
in. There aren't any six, just to be clear,
If we're talking about a D6 mechanic, right? Right? Okay, you know, to come back to like what are your chances to succeed at opening a door or finding a secret, right? You're still thinking in increments of six, right? As opposed to increments of 10, which I find more natural.
Interesting. I'd never thought of that. That wasn't my thought process in the stone encumbrance thing. So it's not a thought I've ever had. Okay. Now, on the flip side, I'll say there's a lot of other things in early D&D that are, you know, just nicely six steps. So you have, I think he recommends starting with a sixth level dungeon. You've got six levels of wizard spells. You have six different types of dragons. You have something else that's also six. So it's kind of nice that monster levels, right? There's six different monster levels in original D&D. So it's just kind of nice that it fits all that kind of subject matter fits into this psychological space of 7 ± 2 that is easy for your short-term memory to hang on to. I can roll a D6 for random spell level, random dragon type, random monster level, something like that.
I'm more thinking of it in terms of, nice. I'm thinking of it more in terms of probability and just doing math in my brain plus one mean? Right. And I agree. It's easy to lose it on a D20 based system, right? That a plus one to a D20 roll is a 5% incremental change, which sounds like a lot when I say it that way, but really isn't, right? It's not that noticeable, right? Whereas a plus one on a D6 is changing my probability of success by 16 2/3%, which is a chunkier change, and it feels more impactful.
Absolutely. But
what a weird number, 16 2/3. That's a...
Well, I mean, don't think about it like that. It's, you know, you embrace, right? Like when you move to metric or when you move to imperial inches, don't convert anymore. Just think it's 1 out of 6, and that's huge. And I will say, on that point, that there's a bit of a problem that they set up some modifiers back in chainmail of like you could have a sword that adds +1. Great. Well, that's huge when you roll it, when your combat is a D6 based, and they kept the same modifiers. Also, like if I hit somebody in the back or something like that, they kept the same modifiers when they shifted from a D6 system to a D20 system, and it completely submerged how meaningful those things were. So in chainmail, +1 sword, enormous. +1 sword in D&D, you could almost forget about it. They should have thought about that.
That's the fun thing I find interesting when you start to try and move away from, you know, okay, we don't want to do ability checks, the numbers are too big or whatever. We're going to boil the abilities down to a modifier. Okay, so I have a strength of 14, and therefore I have a +1. What does that apply to? And the answer is, well, everything, right? A bunch of things. Yeah. It applies to your hit, and it applies to your damage, and it applies to your ability to open doors. Well, the hit chance, my +1 is giving me a 5% bonus, but my open doors is giving me a 16 2/3% chance. Oh,
true.
So it's like, it's beefier. It's a beefier, it's a different thing, right?
It true. I'm pretty at peace with that. Because the D20 stuff, you're probably adding your level because it's some, and I think I can rationalize that is this is something that takes specific professional expertise, like fighting with a sword. So you're going to add your fighter level. Whereas the D6 stuff is stuff you're not going to be adding your level to. It's some kind of brute natural ability thing, like just bust open a door. So I'm okay. Absolutely true statement. And I'm pretty much at peace with that. I'm okay with that.
So where do we land then in stuff like when we try to move away from this to things, especially I'm curious about stuff that starts to overlap with thief abilities. So for example, climbing.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
This happens all the time. The party wants to climb this surface. They have a rope or not, but they're under duress. You think there's some chance that they might slip and fall. We want to roll some dice. What dice do we roll? How does the 16 strength fighter's ability compare to the 6 level thief's ability?
I mean, I'll tell you what I do in OED I made that a D6, partly thinking that again, non-thieves should be able to do this. So it's a D6, mm-hmm. and the thieves get an extra pip per 4 levels, which is pretty close to getting 1 extra pip on a D20 every level.
Right. So let's peel off the Band-Aid here, Dan. Are we talking roll high or roll low on the D6? Are you expecting rolling a die for the thief, or is the thief rolling the die?
Okay, for what it's worth. Okay, so in my notes, right? I had the question: how to handle these different mechanics at the table with new players, like I had at RPG Con playing through our last Dungeon Design Dash. And so part of what I do to make that palatable is that nowadays I pretty much commit to me doing all the math in advance and just telling the player what the target is on their die. And that makes it a little bit easier to digest. And I'm not asking, so I'm saying, you take this die, I'm doing math, da, 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 da. You need to see a blah on this. And granted that, I may not be entirely consistent. But most of the time, right, if I'm doing the math, it's going to be roll low. It will be roll low on a D6 if I'm doing the numbers in my head, because it's easier to do it in that direction. So for that particular halfling thief the other weekend, I said, you need to roll a 1 through 4 on this D6, and that will be success.
I guess, personally, I'm not happy about that, right? I want them...
Interesting.
Anytime, I feel like there's an emotional connection to, I roll a D6, I see the 1 come up, and I think that's bad. And I think that's just ingrained in our psyches as humans, that a 1 on a D6 is bad, right? Snake eyes sucks.
I don't have anyone at my tables who complain about that when I verbally just clarified it right before the roll. So when I say right before the roll, I don't have anybody that is confused or says, oh, I thought I won when I lost. That is not a thing that I'm hearing at my tables.
I mean, I can't say that I've heard any player I'm talking about from my perspective of me empathizing of how I would feel as the player. I know that I would feel weird seeing the 1 and going like, oh, but that's good. Yay. But it feels backwards to me.
You would be probably shocked, Paul, at the number of nights that I go to bed and I fall asleep going, boy, if there was one thing in the world... about gaming, if there's one thing in the gaming world that I could change, I really wish that everything in D&D had been roll low from the outset, and everything would work so much smoother. And I think about you, and obviously changing at this point for someone like yourself would be aggravating, obviously. And boy, I wish that they had done it correctly at the outset. And Their instincts at the outset was for things to be roll low. Almost all the mechanics in D&D at the outset were roll low on a D6. And they had these very rare outlier exceptions. Like if you just look at all the D6 stuff, 85% of those mechanics are all low. There's one single example that's roll high just because they're duplicating what they did in an outdoor survival supplement book. If I could change anything, it would be make everything roll low. I think if it had been that from the outset, nobody would have a problem with it. Like a lot of conventional stuff, and everything would work. It's partly why I was running Star Frontiers for 2 years, just so I could get the breath of fresh air of a consistent roll low mechanic. And that's what they were doing with D6s. That's what we're doing with percentiles. And the only thing is they wanted to make it high on the D20. And it wasn't. And even when Gary wrote the rule originally, pre-D&D, he wrote the words, you have a 1 in 20 chance to hit per fighter level, right? And he wrote it roll low, and then he changed it to roll high later on. And it has caused this, I have a thesis here I could read. I have a roll low thesis here I could read. I'll let you tell me if you want to hear it.
I don't, Dan, because here's okay. The thing. I don't disagree with any of your logic. I don't disagree with any of your logic, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. Okay. Or I'm saying I live in the real world. And as my mother used to say, you know, all of that and a nickel will get you a cup of coffee. Right, but not really, because you can't even buy a cup of coffee for a nickel anymore. Right, so I live in the real world where it's just not there. It's just not there, and I feel like the math is viable, and I should be able to invert the math. We did it with Target 20. I should be able to do it with the D6 rolls as well to get what I want.
Sort of.
Yeah, why not? Why can I not?
Okay, I gotta read my. I got to read my 5-point thesis to answer that question.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
You want to hear it?
Try to keep
okay. And you know what? This has come up more than once with a couple of guests. So I'm thank you for bringing up this particular topic, because it forced me to refine my elevator pitch. Here's my roll low thesis. Okay. So here come 4 axioms, and you can tell me whether you agree with them or not. Number one, we're going to make rolls in the open. Agree or disagree?
Yep. I like that. Okay. Yeah, I do like to make
great. Number two, I feel, based on my play experience, is that players should know the result on sight. As soon as the die comes up, every player at the table should be immediately just see the number, not do any math whatsoever, and just immediately know whether it was success or failure. I find play is more immediate, dramatic, and immersive when you can see it instantly on sight.
I understand where you're coming from with that one, but I don't know that I entirely agree. Certainly, that's not how I play basic combat. Players don't know how tough the monster is. They have to shout out a number, and I have to tell them if they hit or not. They are not going to know just by looking at the die if they hit.
And so this will be the place where we aren't quite on, where we have slightly different opinions at this moment. So I found a lot more excitement to not have to have that delay where there's math being done. So anyway, so there's my second axiom that's on my mind. So third, given that, so if you grant me how I'd prefer to see that, given that three, all the modifier math to the target needs to be done pre-roll in order to make that possible, in order for me to say, you need to roll this. The math needs to be done pre-roll. So granted that I'm trying to do the math pre-roll, it's easier to do that in a roll low context, because then bonuses are additions to your target number, et cetera. Whereas in a roll high context, bonuses are subtraction from your target number. And that's where you run into THACO. That's where you run into THACO, mm-hmm. that everybody's mm-hmm. like, oh, everything's reversed, because the intent is to produce the target number pre-roll. And for that, in a roll high context, your additions are subtractions, and your penalties are additions, and everything's backwards. Whereas in a roll low context, like with Star Frontiers, the bonuses are adds and the penalties are subtracts. So basically, there's my 4-point thesis. Now, other things that are nice about it, and here come three. Number one, the target is the probability. You don't need to turn 1.6 into 16%. It's just the target is the probability. Two, roll low represents variance from the target. I could roll a d20, and if I roll a 2, you're 2 inches off from your target. If I roll a 4, you're 4 inches away from a bullseye. And then finally, number three, again, in original D&D, their instinct was clearly roll low. All the d6s were roll low, ability checks were roll low, and we could keep all that stuff consistent and keep the full ability scores relevant and not dispose of them as they do now and just show a bonus. There's my thesis.
Do you want to use ability checks? Is that a thing you want in the game?
Yeah, that's pretty handy.
Yeah, so we should get rid of D6 to open doors, and I should just roll under strength.
I would accept that.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's not terrible.
In combat, do you tell the players the armor class of the thing they're fighting?
I've started to do that. I have actually started to do that fairly recently, possibly this year. For what it's worth, I was one of the referees at Gary Con for the Legends of Roleplaying tournament, and Paul Stormberg had made the player character sheets, and he had complete charts, right? Complete Thaco style charts of you use this weapon, mm-hmm. here's all the different ACs, here's your target number. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I said, I'm just going to tell the players the AC. Is it AC 5? And you, player, you look up in your table and you announce the whole table what your target number is pre-roll. And then again, and it worked super yep. nice like that. And I'm like, there's a little bit of fudging I'm doing here. Would they actually know how hard to hit? But it works so well, I'm just happy to tell them the armor nowadays.
I mean, I feel like you're going right back to, if I look at the original BX character sheet, right? There's a little fill in the chart here, right? This pre-Thaco. Yeah. So you just have the, like, right in your to-hit chart. And the only reason to give the player that chart is because you're going to tell them the armor class, right? Otherwise, that chart's not helpful.
Well, I will say that, so you and I agree on that. Many, many players out there I've run into have been trained to announce, I hit this armor or better. Like, a lot of players I run into at conventions, apparently what they do in their home games, they roll the die, look up on the table and say, I hit AC 5 or better. And I have to say, no, we're going to do that before.
And then the DM's got to do the comparison math, right? Of like, yes, I know the armor class and they're right. And that's the way, right? That's right. Again, now you're still in that system. You've still taken away from the player the ability to tell from a glance whether they've succeeded or failed, but you've given now to the now the player's doing the math instead of the DM. I don't really care about who does the math. Honestly, I want the math to be easy, whoever has to do it. It's interesting. And I think this comes right from, like, again, in modern D&D, all these D6 rolls have gone away and they've been replaced with DCs, right? You have a difficulty class. You are trying to hit this number. And I have on my character sheet all the pluses and minuses that are going to happen. So I'm going to roll a D20 and add a bunch of numbers. And I'm going to say, great, I succeed. I hit DC 12. I hit DC 23, whatever it is. Don't care. Right. And the funny thing is, I think that, like, in modern play, I think a lot of times what you see is when it's not combat, you do announce the target number. Okay. This is you're trying to jump across the chasm. The DC is 15. Mm-hmm. Make your roll. Yeah. Right. And now we do have at a glance, I know whether I succeeded or failed, although there's probably math involved, right? Okay, I know I have a +3. Yes. Let me roll the die.
There's a delay as the player processes the math. And then did they remember the DC and all that kind of stuff?
Interesting.
Yeah. If I can get rid of that delay for the math, I get happier and happier.
That's interesting. That's very interesting, Dan.
Yeah. And I'll say, Star Frontiers doesn't have any armor class, right? That's a complete non-issue. So all the range modifiers there can be pre-computed cleanly pre-roll. And there just isn't any secret information like that armor number. So I'm coming off a cycle of where that whole thing just wasn't an issue, which was nice.
All right. So walk me through it. In this specific case, we have a stuck door that is -2 to open. I have a fighter with a 16 strength. What do I have to roll?
In OED, you need a 1 or 2 on a D6. Because
how do we get there? Walk me through the math.
Great. Your 16 strength modifier is +2, and I've got a -2 for the big door. They cancel out, and you're back to the 1 or 2 on D6.
What is the math you're doing in your head to get there? Are you okay? Let me make it harder then. Let's say I have a 14. Right? Is it 14 +1? Let's say I have a +1 modifier to my strength. How do I get to the target number? What's the math you're doing?
So my starting target number is 2. Add 1 for the strength up to 3. Subtract 2 for the big door. I'm down to 1. You need a 1 on a D6.
And do you cap it at 1? Or is it possible for it to say, you just can't do it?
Yeah, it can be impossible. Yeah.
I don't mind all that other than the fact that I want roll high, right? And I think I could manage that by saying, like, okay. And the weird thing is, as I was thinking about this, a lot of the problems I have with the D6 mechanics is the language, right? It's always written as there's a 1 in 6 chance, there's a 2 in 6 chance, and my brain just doesn't jump to the math immediately. Whereas if you said, this is a D6 test, DC5. I go, okay, I'm going to roll 5 or 6 on a D6. Got it. And then if you say it's minus 2, or don't even say it's minus 2. Say that this is a DC7 challenge. This is DC7 on a D6. Go.
Respectfully, I totally think otherwise. Respectfully, I cannot disagree more about that. Because with roll low, you don't need to do any math because the target is the probability. Right? With high, you need these two separate things of... You've got the roll with a bonus, and you have the DC, and you need to track these two different factors. But with roll low, the target is the probability. So if I say 2 and 6, I need to roll a 2 or lower, and the probability is 2 and 6, right? So you don't need to distinguish because they're the same.
But you're putting too much load on the DM, is my argument. Like, there's probably something on that character sheet that I have forgotten. Right. And I would rather them know, oh, but I have these modifiers. I have this thing. I have this magic item. This gives me a +1 over here. I got a +2 over there, et cetera, et cetera. I would like to give my players the ability to, I'm asking you to roll the die, and I'm telling you the challenge level. You need to hit a 7 or better, roll the die, figure out your pluses.
In original D&D, I don't find that to be a problem. There's a small enough number of modifiers that I'm not missing stuff. I may ask, is there anything else you can think of that will help you here? And then I'm doing all the math. And I find that, for what it's worth, my ability to do math is better than the majority of my players, and it therefore goes faster and smoother. I'm at tables frequently where things get paused for a minute or two because a player can't find a number on a sheet. Second player needs to come in, and they okay, this is the attack bonus. You can roll a d20, do this. They add the number up wrong. Every game I'm at, player rolls a d20, they announce what's on the... I rolled a 14, okay? 14 is what they got. And then second player has to go, did you add in your attack bonus? Oh, that's a 7. What's 14 plus 7? 21. So I, as DM, am now fielding of information packets, which is a 14, and then a 7, and then a 21, and I have to decipher which one is the actual number I'm trying to compare. So it'd be far better for me to just compute all the numbers in advance and say, you need to see an 8 on that die. And I find it's much smoother, much faster, much cleaner for me, the DM, to do as much lifting as possible.
So are you doing that in combat? Are you? Yeah. If I'm attacking the mummy, you're telling me you need to roll a 14.
I try to do that, yes.
And I'm interesting.
It would be far easier if it was roll low. I am taking extra burden because the roll high flip-flop stuff. And it would be much easier for me as DM if it was roll low, absolutely. In roll low, bonuses are pluses. In roll high, bonuses are minuses. And so, yeah, in roll high, it's not great, but I still do it.
Okay. Well, I think you're entitled to your opinion, Dan. I think your opinion is informed that you by the fact that you have a very big capacity to hold a lot of rules in your head and do math very quickly in your head. And perhaps that those of us less skilled in that don't want to do that and want to share the burden around the table. So that's fascinating. I'm still curious if there's anything we can do for that one line of text in that dungeon design dash that is better than -2, because I just find that very confusing to look at.
Can I make,
but again,
just make
maybe
a little
I'm not super, you know.
Let's try to hash something out right now. But just as a little side point, you know, you've hit on a very, you know, a really interesting pain point, I guess, specifically on the opening doors, because there's one tiny little wrinkle in the history of D&D, and that is that, as we can see, opening doors was roll low on D6 in original D&D. We saw it in advanced D&D. In, you know, Moldvay's BX that we love, it was roll low. In Menser's basic book, he was also bothered, Paul, the same way you are, and he went in and specifically flipped the open doors D6 to roll high. And for Menser, you open a door on 5 or 6, but he didn't change any other D6 roll. So hearing is low, and climbing is low, and pit is low, and wandering monsters are so low. And he only changed that. And for me, like, now I'm bothered because he's got one exceptional rule that's roll high. And it's like, just keep it all the same, man. What? Oh, God.
I agree. I don't like that. And there's a part of me that does, as much as we're picking on open doors, I'm using that as the written example that is at least well documented, because I do want to expand that to other things. Again, my character needs to jump over this 4-foot chasm. What is the chance of success? What dice do I roll? How do I do that? I would like that to be common. It would be nice if I said, well, that's a D6 strength check. You have a 2 in 6 chance of success, right? Like, it's just standardized. I would enjoy that. I would prefer that. It bothers me that the chance to open doors and the chance to hear a noise are vaguely different, right? One is a baseline of 2 in 6, and one has a baseline of 1 in 6, and it's not clear why. And I know that elves are better at secret doors, and they find it in 2 in 6. Does that mean that elves get a +1, or that all non-elves get a -1? What's happening here?
Now, I think the last thing you were talking about, hear noise, right, I think.
Sorry. Talking about find secrets, right? Isn't it 1 in 6 for everybody and 2 in 6 for elves? Or is it 2 in 6 and 3 in 6? See, can't even keep it in my head. That's my problem.
In OED, right, I try to refine that the way that you're talking about, and I do set up all those things as 2 in 6 base chance. You know, some of those I change by a pip in order to make that easier. And then I give, again, 2 in 6 base for everybody. And then my elves have a +1 chance to find wooden based traps. And my dwarves have a +1 chance to find stone based traps. And my thieves have a +1 chance to climb a wall at first level. And stuff like that. Yeah. So secret passages in original D&D, that's 1 or 2 for everybody. But it's 4 chances and 6 for an elf. So it's +2 for
an
elf.
Yeah, they were, right. You have normalized at least the target number for most of these things, right? So you're saying you've normalized down to a 2 in 6 chance, even though in the OD&D book, sometimes it was 1 in 6 base and sometimes it was 3 in 6 base, and they shifted around.
It was mostly 2 in 6. Okay, so again, the basis in original D&D for secret doors was 2 in 6. Same for traps, same for surprise.
I swear that there were some that were 1 in 6 based.
Yeah, elves to find secret doors are 4 in 6. Hearing for humans specifically is 1 in 6. So I would say they have -1 chance there.
Right.
Yeah.
But the way the text is written, I guess is humanocentric. So we assume that that's 1 in 6 is the baseline, and the other races have a +1. But whatever, I actually enjoy the idea of saying, like, no, baseline is 2 in 6, and humans just have bad hearing. Actually, I really like that interpretation. My question, Dan, is, are you extending this? Is this the mechanic you use in play? If I'm, say, trying to walk across a balance beam, is that a 2 in 6 chance with a D6 modified by dexterity?
It might be, and I might also, there's some flexibility there. It might be, or if it's completely novel, I might in fact say D20 under dexterity.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's not uncommon for me to say that.
There's a part of me that wants to, again, maybe this is just from my history as being in charge of all game mechanics that are not combat.
Yeah,
I want them to have a common mechanic, again, just so I just can remember fewer things. I just want to try and keep fewer things in my brain at once, so they're not stumbling when somebody says, oh, I try to do blah, 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 and I'm like, crap, which rule was that? I don't remember what applies in this case. Especially with the overlap stuff. That's the stuff that kills me.
Go with 2 and 6 as a basis is perfectly fine. I think in my Wizards Warzone game, I have a slippery glacier, and if you run, it's a 2 and 6 chance you fall down. It's fine.
Again, I don't mind it being a D6, but there is. I want to side with Mensur here and go real high on this stuff. I'm not trying to convince you that that's the right way to do it. It is the way I would like.
That's why you're finding it harder to do the math. If it's roll low, then it's easier to do that math.
I hear you.
I
hear your logic, and I disagree.
Okay, so let's say So let's say hypothetically that you normally open doors on a 5 or 6, and then I want the this big door adjustment to be clearly harder. So I would think to express that as -2. So
I want to say DC 7.
That's I mean, DCs don't exist, right? There's no DC in any classic D&D thing.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also there's no common mechanic for this stuff. I mean, we are in the realm of invention here. So I don't mind inventing. But that said, I did want to go over like how some other, I have a big stack of books here of different, how different systems have solved this over the time. Very interesting to look at some of the retro clones, some of the newer games that are inspired by old school play, but have new school sensibilities. I'm looking at things like Shadow Dark and Five Torches Deep. We don't have time for any of that, Dan. We are out of time.
I want to come back to this, Paul. You've got me very curious about how these other games do. Like, I knew enough to talk about, you know, early D&D, third edition. I knew about, you know, what Mensur did in one particular case, and you've got me very curious because I have a guess as to what other games would do pre or post 2000, frankly. But I don't know. So I don't know.
We'll have to. I want to save it for the after chat.
Wow.
We'll have to save it for the after chat. Viewers, if you have thoughts on how you like to adjudicate this stuff, do you prefer roll high? Do you prefer roll low? Do you like the D6? Do you hate the D6 and want everything to be D20 based? What systems are you aware of that do something interesting and unusual? Because I just grabbed the random books that were on my table, on my bookshelf here, and there's systems that I have blind spots to. How does this work in Old School Essentials? I don't know. Couldn't tell you. Leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Drop a comment here in the YouTube video comment section. We'd love to hear from you. And clearly, this is an itch we want to scratch some more. So I think that the probability that we come back to this topic is perhaps 4 in 6.
Yes. Okay, wonderful. That was exactly what I was hoping for. So remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We are on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and TikTok and Loops and GitHub, and we have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and standardize that like button.
If you prefer to listen to us in the audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. They're also available through various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to this show on one of those carriers right now and it gives the ability to do so, please consider giving us a 5-star review. That helps other listeners find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And like Paul said at the top of the hour, you'll get access to a private Discord server where the conversation of the smartest people in role-playing is continuing 24/7 around the clock. We would love for you to join us there with all our other patrons. And in about 10 minutes, we'll be there to continue this conversation / debate / issue on our live video after chat that we love. So if you can get there and give you, there was so much great chat here today, and I couldn't see half of it because of our really energetic conversation here. So if you have comments that you want to make sure that we don't miss today, please connect to us in about 10 minutes, and we want to hear from you before the day is out. Don't forget that we are live here every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please, we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.